That was Ted's quick take.
TJP hot take.
Hot take. There you go. Hot take. Damn, I'll get this lingo down yet. And pretty soon our listeners are going to know more about our show than we know.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Jim.
Teddy Ted. How's it going tonight?
Good. I think last week you had the office party, so tonight we had our Christmas with the neighbors. As you know, our great neighbors are heading up to their daughter's house tomorrow.
Who could that be?
So I will hand off Frank and Barbara to you tomorrow, but we were with them tonight. And the kids and Anne and I hung over there with them for some eggnog and dessert.
Oh, cool.
And a little pre-gift exchange.
Nice.
So Christmas has begun. The Christmas weekend has begun for the Willett children.
And something tells me it's going to be a long Christmas weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Ted's neighbors happen to be my in-laws. So he's going to hand them off to us, and then we get to enjoy them, and the boys will enjoy their granny and papa.
That's right.
But yeah, so glad you had a fun night with them. We here on the Central Coast had a great launch at Vandenberg Air Force Base.
I know. It was amazing. So we're separated by about 120 miles or so.
Something like that, yeah.
On the drive home at like 5, right after 5 o'clock, we're driving to our house, and Bryce looked out the window. He goes, "Look, it's a rocket." And we're like, "That's not a rocket. What are you talking about?" And it was this beautiful smoke trail and this crazy plume. And we're like, "What is that, you know, flickering in the sky?" And I'm guessing that was the same thing. That was that Falcon 9 that launched from your house, but we saw it all the way down here in the valley.
Well, not from my house, technically, but yeah, Vandenberg Air Force Base. You know, the funny thing is, I've seen pictures already on the internet from the LA area, and the first stage rocket that jettisoned from the primary, it created like a plume that was really cool. And the funny thing is, so my youngest boy, he's 3, and he wanted to watch the rocket on the computer because we do watch a lot of rocket videos on the computer. And I said, "No, Mikey, let's go outside. You know, the rocket's going to launch for real. You can see it." And it's going off and it's rumbling the ground and everything. And he was watching and he got bored immediately because it was just this like bright dot flying through this. I mean, it's a big bright dot, but it was just flying through the sky. And my older boy, he was just all about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a couple cameras set up. I did some long exposures.
I saw. Looked good.
I did get some cool pictures. I'm not sure if you've seen them.
I saw one or two of them, and that's when Frank and I were putting all the pieces together. And, you know, I think when we saw it, it was just like smoke trails.
Yeah.
The contrails or whatever they're called.
Contrails, yeah.
And Bryce and I and Anne and Audrey were all looking out the window and were like, "What are they going to write? It must be some kind of, you know, skywriter writing something."
Oh, yeah.
What are they going to write? And then it became that big plume. And we're like, "I guess nothing. We're not going to write anything."
And that was what I was getting at a few minutes ago, is the pictures that I saw from L.A. on Instagram, they were incredible. And I'm thinking, why didn't I see that? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I was right underneath.
You're
it.
Too close.
I was too close, you know? Like, yeah. So, Ted, what's in store tonight? Tell us.
So, I guess we have a bunch of segments. We're happy to say that I'm getting some in-person and Twitter requests. So, that's always a good thing. And tonight we have a couple things that we're reviewing that are both from requests.
Awesome.
Will be our main TJP deep dive is going to be about Ocean's 8, which was initially a request from my wife, but it was also from a coworker who was listening to the pod. So thank you, Terrence. And
awesome.
Then later we'll either do another what am I calling it? A TJP hot take on an older movie, but a great trailer that I had not, that I had missed when it came out, for The Book of Henry.
Yeah, The Book of Henry. I checked that out tonight. You know, you mentioned it.
Yeah, I mean, Rahilio this morning, I was up checking the Twitter machine.
The music man.
Yeah, he's the guy who did our intro music and outro music. And he follows us on Twitter and he hit us up and he was like, I know you guys are doing new trailers, but here's one from the summer. Didn't know if you guys saw this. And while I was getting the kids lunch ready, I was checking out this trailer and the trailer was great and it has so much going on. So I was like, oh, yeah, we'll totally do that. And I immediately put a tweet out while I was getting lunch ready. And I went back to check the tweet later. And I was like, oh, my God, there's like all these typos. And I know exactly what was going on. I was like trying to do something. And, you know, so it was very distracting. But it was great. It was great to get feedback. Love feedback. Love suggestions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I created a hashtag for suggestions, too. We're going to do hashtag TJP AudSug, AUDSUG. So that's for audience suggestion.
So hashtag TJP AudSug.
Yeah. So audience.
Okay. Explain that to me, please.
So I just abbreviated audience suggestions give people as many characters of the 280 to explain why they like the movie or not explain it. But
yeah,
the rest of our hashtags for our hashtag TJP deep dive and hashtag TJP hot take, those are for us when we put our stuff out.
Sure.
The deep dive will always be a podcast. And the hot takes, we'll do some hot takes on air in the pod. And we'll do some hot takes. I'll do hot takes, you know, throughout the day as they hit me on Twitter. As I see trailers, I'll just, you know, we'll do hot takes on
cool.
our Twitter account.
Loving it. Hey, why don't we jump into Ocean's 8 then?
Cool.
I'll let you start. You know, I mean, any initial ideas, any initial...
So I love the idea of the way the trailer begins. It has a lot of the qualities of the initial Ocean's 11 movie with George Clooney, and it has some of that feel and some of the nuance. I think
right.
I'll probably add that one to the show notes as well. But there's definitely a feel like they're rebooting the franchise and giving you the look at everybody that's going to be involved in this. I don't know why there's only 8, though. That was a big question mark for me.
I thought of that, and I was talking to my wife, mm-hmm. and, you know, I asked her, I said, you know, because we were watching the trailer together, and I said, you know, there's only 8. Why not 11? And she said, you know, well, women are just more efficient. they don't need 11. And I was like, ah, that's brilliant. But I got to thinking, watching the trailer, that the biggest import from the United States around the world is culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie just screams American culture. Everybody wants to be rich. Everybody wants to have jewels, go to Hollywood. I mean, there's got to be like an explosion or two. But I think, you know, American culture is one of our biggest imports. And it just seems to me that this particular style of writing and movie making, it's just one of those things that's just what people aspire to. You know, you have so much money that it doesn't even matter. But the other thing too about this is, I think it's for the ladies. Most heist movies, they seem to be male centric. You know, men do the planning, fighting, the shooting, they bask in the glory, where women tend to be the femme fatale, the lure, or the distraction. But this particular movie, though, I think kind of turns that on its head, where the ladies now are...
They're in the driver's seat.
Yeah, they're leading the job. You know, they're planning the job. They know how to get into the other women to get their jewels or whatever. Well, yeah, they're at their jewels, but to get whatever they're after.
Do you think though, I was thinking it's jewels and it's fashion. And it felt like, you know, why couldn't they pull a heist off of a casino or something else? Why does it have to, you know, is it because they're girls, we have to have red and pink, and we got to go after jewels and clothing and things like that. I mean, it felt like a little bit like it was playing into a stereotype.
Oh, Ted.
You know, it is.
Ted, you fed right into my hand.
Oh, okay.
So I was totally thinking the same thing. You know, the one thing you learn when you go to college.
Yeah.
Don't stereotype. Stereotypes aren't real, all this stuff. I couldn't agree more with you that, yeah, the men are after the Benjamins. I mean, how many times do we have a movie with a silver briefcase handcuffed to somebody's hand? They crack it open and there's $1 million in $100 bills and everybody in the audience drools.
So just a side note, because I heard this story because my wife is on top of all things George Clooney. One of his friends came out recently, I guess anonymously, but I think there were only 11 of his friends at this party. And he had a party at his house. He had a dinner party at his house, and he invited his closest friends. Maybe I'm thinking it's 11 just because of Ocean's 11, but
sure.
He invited his closest friends. And when they showed up to dinner at his house, each one of their seats had a suitcase in it. And each one of those suitcases had $1 million in cash. And he was thanking his friends for being his friends since the beginning or whatever, since the beginning of that. And on top of that, well, I don't know whether there's a 1099 in there or something like that, but he also paid for all their taxes on that money. So it was like literally free and clear, $1 million a pop for being George Clooney's friend and for not, you know, for being cool while he was coming up in the game.
Ted, what I want to know is, are you buying my friendship? But no, you know, I mean, yeah, that kind of stuff is, you know, those stories, whatever it's worth. I mean, those stories are incredible, but you know, I mean, getting back to what we were talking about, I mean, I can't imagine if you had a bunch of dudes, I mean, like, why aren't they doing a heist on a shoe store? What I'm getting at is, like, yeah, the stereotypes sometimes transcend themselves, and, you know, but what better way to, I guess, to get women in their seats? Because the other thing I was thinking is, the writers, producers, director, and so on, they're probably looking at the demographics of this type of a movie year in, year out, movie in, movie out. And they're probably looking at just most people aren't, you know, or most people going to this movie or this genre of movie aren't women. They're men. So they're probably trying to figure out how to get women's butts in the seats for a heist movie. You know, you have The Italian Job, Ocean's 11.
Now You See Me. That's another one. I like that one.
But yeah, I mean, get him to steal jewels and fashion and dresses and shoes, and all of a sudden you have a women's movie. I mean, it's just, yeah, the stereotypes, you know, transcend itself, I think.
And I think throughout the trailer, when they're showing people at the Met at this gala, which I know of because it has the crazy outfits and the outlandish designers. It has a lot of pop culture icons. You know, I think it has every Kardashian in it. And I think it's throughout the trailer. And then as you kind of dig through the supporting cast, it's a lot of the New York elite on top of Hollywood elite.
Sure.
And I think that's something that the Ocean's franchise before has done kind of openly and kind of tongue in cheek through Ocean's 13. But now with Ocean's 8, it feels a little forced, but I'm still excited. I was a big fan of the Ghostbusters reboot. So when all the ladies did Ghostbusters.
Oh, with the women doing the ghost busting. Yeah.
No, I liked it. They didn't, and, you know, they didn't change it to, you know, ghosts in shoe stores, like you said. they kept it pretty
the stereotype of ghost busting.
Yeah, they kept it pretty straight to the story of the first one, and it actually played with the stereotype, flipping it on its head with Chris Hemsworth playing the dumb blonde.
So the other thing I find ironic about television movies is that, you know, people are so much against crime and bad people. Yet when it comes to movies and TV, it seems we root for the worst people. You know, let me follow you down the rabbit hole for a second here. But yeah, it seems like it's probably born out of like ethical dilemmas. But, you know, you take Bryan Cranston's character, Walter White.
Yeah.
You know, he has cancer. He got the shaft from his business partner and he's dying. So he decides it's time to sell the best meth on the market. And he becomes this like drug lord who is peddling his amazing and incredible methamphetamine. But yet, whatever happens, you're always hoping he wins.
Well, put on your psychology hat then and just let me know what do you think that is.
Well, the criminal becomes the victim. And I'm wondering, is that what's happening here with Ocean's 8? Sandra Bullock starts off in the front of the parole board. Oh, and by the way, spoiler alert, reminds me of last week when you were saying some people don't watch spoilers. Is this just one of those other, or another example of where people just root for the bad people in the whole thing who are robbing and stealing and pillaging?
So Heat and Reservoir Dogs, some of my favorites from back in the day, they all have codes that the whole movies are, they're all driven by a code of ethics amongst thieves or criminals. And when you break that code, then that becomes the interest of the reason that we're telling this story. So in this trailer for Ocean's 8, we know that there's a heist that's going to go on. We know that Sandra's putting a team together, and we can kind of infer that it's going to follow the same lines. But I don't know, there's nothing that heightens it for me. You know, I think in the original Ocean's, well, not the original, in the original Clooney Ocean's 11 movies, it felt like there was style to the movies. It was very stylized, and it had the moodiness of Soderbergh, and he plays with lighting and exposure, and he plays with the camera and the way he shoot things. And then Ocean's 8, the trailer for that, in comparison, it hits you kind of flat. You know, they're going through the motions of putting the team together and doing all this stuff, and the caliber of the actresses is top notch. But as far as the cinematography, it kind of feels like flat and, you know, playing it straight.
Yeah, I think the caliber of the cast, like you said, top notch. I mean, tons of great actresses. One of my biggest concerns is everything that was fun or funny about it, you've already seen in the trailer. And it's one of those types where, yeah, I don't need to go to see that in the movies. I've already seen the funny parts.
So there's a term in when you release a movie. The opening weekend numbers are driven by marketing usually, and that's what they say, like marketing and test screenings and the critical acclaim of a movie drives the opening weekend numbers and how much awareness you have driven to that opening weekend and what you have it going against. Uh-huh. And then the drop-off from that opening weekend is about 50%. If you go to Box Office Mojo, it's fun to watch movies drop off. So from the opening weekend, if you open at, you know, 60 million, then the second weekend, you're probably going to be around 30 million. And the measure of dropping off higher or lower than 50% on the second weekend determines on whether you have what they call legs. So opening weekend is kind of it's all an algorithm, right? So they say if we put $100 million into marketing, we're pretty sure we can get this, you know, X number of dollars. And then the legs,
the legs
determine, you know, whether a movie has legs or not determines whether you will get a higher than 50% weekend number two. So it's an interesting thing to say because I'm setting up my 3-word review.
Gotcha. And I did not forget yet this week. So I would say the main thing is it's fun, a lot of action. I think editing and cinematography makes movies like this. And the other thing I'm wondering is, do we have a Sting-esque sort of ending where we get this twist that stings the audience to say, wow, didn't see that coming. I don't know. Maybe that might happen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Overall, I think it'll be lighthearted, fun. You know, night at the movies, take out your date.
Definite date movie.
Dinner and a movie, kind of a movie. I mean, I think that's the audience here is maybe couples, younger couples, older couples that maybe are a little entrenched into the original Ocean's 11.
When you say original, you mean Clooney, right? Not the Sinatra.
No. I'm talking about the Sinatra one. Like, I mean, I'm talking
the Sinatra,
about like,
though, even going way back.
Yeah, I'm talking, it may hit into, you know, my parents' age in a sense, you know. I mean, I hate to say they're getting old, but they are getting old.
We're all getting old.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, I think it's going to hit to either a young audience, boyfriend, girlfriend, or the empty nesters. I don't see it happening to kind of that middle demographic.
What do you think about the music?
You know, and that brings me, and that was one of the things I thought, too, of being baby boomers.
You know, Nancy Sinatra harkens back to Frank Sinatra's version.
Totally. So that's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah. And then, you know, and maybe it goes back to what we were saying with, you know, the stereotypes and things like, yeah, are they doing a heist on a shoe store? I mean, you know, but overall, I think it's going to be a fun movie. However, I'm probably going to wait for Netflix streaming. How about you?
I'll probably go see it.
You probably will see it. Okay, cool. All right. If you don't have anything else, I would love to hear your three-word review.
For Ocean's 8, I'm going to say heist with legs. And because I thought, when I thought this up, I thought, oh no, that sounds very, very sexist.
Right.
So that's why I give that huge preamble about what legs mean to me as a movie watcher and as a movie marketer. As far as the legs
going,
of the film
going
to
back
carry
to what
it
you were
past opening
about.
Weekend.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
So next we'll do The Book of Henry. So this is
a
movie
bit
that
to
came
say about it.
Yeah, this is a movie that came out last June.
So my initial impression was, here we go again, another one of those two smart kids movies where the protagonist is way too clever, you know, for everybody, including the adults in the audience and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, he did have a pretty cool fort in the woods. So what can I say?
He did, right?
Yeah. But yeah, you know, the other, I would say the main issue I had with the trailer, you know, as a whole, I mean, let's not talk about the story yet or the character development or any of that. The main thing I had about the trailer that I didn't care for was, trailer is about, as I recall, 2 minutes, 34 seconds. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing that I had about this trailer was it took more than halfway to get into the meat of what was actually going on.
So I disagree. I think it was really, really nice. It completely lulled me into a false sense of what was going on in this movie. And it took a full minute to kind of set this stage of the run-of-the-mill small movie. It sold it as this other thing. And then for the last half of it, or the last minute and a half, it completely turns it on its head and turns it into something that you didn't expect over the first minute. You know, it changes scope, it changes tone, it changes the overall feel of what this is. You think it's like young love and maybe the kid's a little out of whack, but by the second half, obviously, it's completely different.
Yeah. No, you know what? I couldn't agree more. I didn't really think of it that way, but I would say, you're right. It did lull me into a way to look at this trailer to say that the second half was unpredictable. The second half was not what I anticipated it to be. And all of a sudden, it turns into an OK Go video where he's he has this
Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, you know, he has this,
the Rube Goldberg machines.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. You know, and they're dropping dominoes and balls yeah. are rolling.
No,
and,
I mean,
yeah.
Part of the Rube Goldberg mindset is the fact that it's complete misdirection. You start the Rube Goldberg and you see a cue ball rolling down a track, and you have no idea where it's going to go from here. And oh, it's going to knock a domino into a bucket, and the bucket's going to launch it into, you know, an iron, and the iron's going to set a match on fire. And then, you know, it's like the things that could happen in a Rube Goldberg contraption are, you know, completely fantastic. So to know that we've set it up in the first half where we don't show that at all, we show the run of the mill, and it's like, ugh, you know, the first minute's putting me to sleep. And then by, you know, halfway, you're like, ooh, who's this neighbor? What's up with him? Oh, he's just the police right. commissioner or whatever. And then you're like, oh, he's an amazing villain. Like, you know, and we don't dive too deep into it. But it's the Book of Henry. It's about Henry and his mom. And they're trying to save the girl. And even though we're trying to save her with them, it's really about this mother-son relationship that's amazing. And they kind of set him up as this Da Vinci-esque character. Instead of having his codex, he has his little notebook, and it has sketches that, you know, liken it to Da Vinci's notebooks, you know?
Yeah, and I agree with you too, with when you look at the cue ball coming down and hitting the dominoes, it's a metaphor for the movie. I don't know where this movie's going, it certainly leaves you in suspense. Haven't yeah. seen it.
I mean, by the end of the first minute, would you say that by the in another minute and a half, I will have Naomi Watts aiming a rifle at the camera?
I was just about to say
her son in her ear.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, you know, I can't help but laugh because that was the next thing out of my mouth was going to be, here she is with this sniper rifle with a silencer and this incredible scope. And I'm thinking, where on earth do you get that? And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, Walmart, you know? But yeah, I mean, but you're so right. And then they show Dean Norris in the sights, and yeah. it kind of ends right at that point. And does she hold him at gunpoint until the police show up to arrest their boss, which adds to a level of intensity? Or does she kill him? I kind of have a hard time believing she kills him. I don't know. It just seems pretty intense as to where this particular scene is going to wind up falling.
Well, I think the thing I love about movies, and as opposed to a series, these characters only have 2 hours to live anyway.
Right.
So if you're talking about just the true sense of the story within the movie, they only have 2 hours to live. So they can do whatever is within their, you know, capabilities within that space.
Now, this one's not based off a true story, is it?
I hope not.
No, okay. Sure, there was something else I was watching.
Horrible people.
Yeah, there's been so many true stories, and I've watched so many trailers that, you know, I get lost in what's true and what's not. So I have a skewed sense of reality, even when it comes to movies, I guess.
Definitely intrigued. Definitely going to see it as soon as I can. Sad I missed it in the theaters, but I don't think I'm going to miss that much from seeing it in the small screen.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, I think you can get the story certainly in a small screen, or in today with their flat screens, they're big enough. But yeah, so do you have a 3-word review for Henry's book? Or the Book of Henry?
The Book of Henry, so I didn't do this one. But let's just spend a few seconds on this.
Come on, you know I'm gonna ask you for everything.
I know, I should have this ready.
Yeah.
It should be part of the prep.
So the other thing you were talking about too, you mentioned to me, was Ridley Scott, All the Money in the World.
Yeah.
And
an amazing story.
Yeah. So, okay, I watched the trailer. We don't have to review it, but I watched the trailer.
Yeah.
And then I watched this video where he's going to reshoot it or something.
He already did. Yeah, he reshot. So did you watch? Did I sent you the interview of Ridley Scott?
I did.
Where he's
talking about reshooting that. Somewhere in that whole thing, I was lost. I have no idea what's going on with it.
It's an amazing turn of events that shows the snapshot of the world that we're living in now. He shot the whole movie, and the movie was in the can, as it were,
right,
with Kevin Spacey as Getty, as the patriarch of this family. So we have Kevin Spacey walking around in old man makeup, and just as an old man. And he's pulling off the Getty look, and he's doing it. And I even watched some of the earlier trailers. I found one from September of last year, and it has Spacey in it. So obviously the news broke about Spacey and his personal shortcomings, and he got fired from all of his current jobs and roles. And I think it was great what Ridley Scott said. I had all these other people to think about, all these other actors that had put their, part of their life, part of their work into this movie. And I had my investors to think of and my own self. And I didn't feel good putting a movie with him in it out. And I didn't want to be torn between happy that people were not going to see a movie because Kevin was in it. And so he basically just pulled the trigger and decided to reshoot all of Kevin Spacey's scenes with Plummer. And, he's a world-class actor in his own right. But he knew exactly why he was there. He knew exactly what he had to pull off, and he did it in a super professional way.
Got it. Yeah.
And so much so that he had his, I think it was, there's a picture online where he had his birthday during the time they were doing the reshoots, and he ordered his own cake. And on the cake, he had a picture of the set of All the Money in the World. And instead of all the people, he had like the grip and the director and the cinematographer and the actors, he had put his face on all of the people within this picture of the cake. And he goes, "I'll replace all of you guys." So I thought it was funny. He didn't take himself so seriously.
That was Ted's quick take.
TJP hot take.
Hot take. There you go. Hot take. Damn, I'll get this lingo down yet. And pretty soon our listeners are going to know more about our show than we know. Or at least myself. I'm still trying to keep up. I mean, I'm treading water here, but...
Okay, so back to the, since we've given me enough time to think about the Book of Henry.
Sure.
So my Ted's three word review for the Book of Henry is Rube's hair trigger.
Rube's hair
Rube's hair trigger. So Rube Goldberg, and of course the hair trigger on that rifle.
Oh, the rifle,
such a evocative shot that it's what stuck with me, the Rube Goldberg contraptions, and the fact that Naomi Watts is like very, very skillfully holding that that sight on.
And it's so funny. I mean, you have this single mom, completely like helpless is the way she comes off, and all of a sudden,
right,
here she is, like silencer, some high powered rifle, and she's laying in the prone ready to take him out. I mean, all of a sudden somehow she's, I don't know. Like
how was her form? How was her form? Could you tell in the shot whether she had some training on that?
Professional. I mean, heck, she's a sniper. Yeah. No, I mean, it was So, yeah, with that, you can tweet at us at T Junkies Podcast or Facebook page Trailer Junkies Podcast.
And you can download us or subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play.
And visit us at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com for everything else we're doing. You can connect with us there.
Be sure to leave comments and share and like us wherever you can.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.